5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Now, a fortnight ago, I spoke to top dietitian Renee McGregor, and in the interview, we touched on disordered eating amongst endurance athletes. Now, it's not a subject we tend to spend a great deal of time discussing, but really it should be. And this week, I spoke to Maurice Haynes, who has overcome her own difficulties with eating in an effort to improve her performance. Now, it's a really interesting interview. We discuss how her performance reached a pinnacle with GB selection, but at the same time her structured eating, her disordered eating, had a major toll on her studies, her relationships, and eventually her health. Now, she's just come back from a series of pretty major injuries, and she attributes these injuries to her disordered eating at that stage in her life. Now, if you enjoy this or any of the other interviews on the Let's Get Running podcast, it'd be really great if you hit the iTunes subscribe button and perhaps post a review for us on there on iTunes. Here's the interview. So what sparked your initial interest in running and athletics?
So my mum was always part of the local running club back home, and I think I went along to some sort of random 5Ks that used to be on sort of like Tuesday evenings. I was probably about 10 years old, so I don't know if I should have really been doing them. But I just went along and sort of potted around and really enjoyed it. And then at secondary school, we did a school cross country, and I came in the top 10 or whatever, and they give you a letter and say, go and join this athletics club. And I went and joined Windsor Slough Eton Hounslow, which is still my club today, and just went from there, really.
And did you have much success as a junior? Were you winning those 5Ks?
I think I was okay as a junior. My coach was so, so good at keeping us sensible, stopping us getting injured, and just putting us back. He would never let us do the road relays because he was you're just too young to be running hard on the road. And we would do all our training in the woods and on the grass and stuff. So I didn't do many big races, but just before coming to uni, I came third at English schools steeplechase. So I got to a decent level, but then you sort of come to Birmingham Uni and everyone's got an English schools medal, so you're oh, never mind.
Was the running part of your decision to go to Birmingham?
Yeah, definitely. I basically only looked at Birmingham, Loughborough and Brunel because they're the big sport ones, if you like. But Birmingham for me just stood out from the others, definitely. And I knew a few people here already, and they had, only good things to say about it.
And obviously you say that the culture was, there was a lot of medalists and
yeah.
Do you think there's a pressure to succeed when you originally arrived? Do you want to keep up with these guys?
Yeah, it was weird. I'd never been in a training group that big, because my training group back home, there was a lot of us, but no one was in my age group or sort of doing any of the same races as me. So I was training with a lot of older guys or slightly younger guys. And then coming here, you're with girls who you normally race. All of a sudden, you're there training with them, and you sort of think, "Oh God, I've got to try and keep up with them." So it took a bit of settling in, but then you just quickly become friends, and it's not really about any of the sort of competitiveness at all.
And did you live with other runners when you were there?
I didn't for my first few years. I lived with people who were doing other sports, but I didn't live with actual other runners, just because. Yeah. I think for me personally, that would have been a bit too intense, to sort of seeing them all the time and training with them and doing it all the time. So I live with runners now, but with very like chilled out running vibes.
And what did you study there at Birmingham?
So my undergrad was in sport and materials science, and I ended up doing it over 4 years rather than three. So I'm still sticking around for the fifth year.
And what do you want to kind of do with it at the end? Have you got any like ambitions post-running for your career?
Oh, gosh, I don't ever think that far ahead, which is really bad. People, like, the worst question you can ask like a final year undergrad is, so like, what are you going to do next year? To be fair, I did sort of look at getting jobs and things like that, but for me, the next logical step was to do the MRes just because of the sort of field that I was in. I needed to like go a bit more specialist and have a bit more experience. But yeah, I mean, I'm doing it part-time, so I'm taking 2 years to do this as well. So ask me again in a couple of years' time and then maybe I'll have a better answer.
And you're running a bit at the moment, but you've had almost a year off.
So I last raced, if you like, I attempted to do the Highgate 10K 2 years ago, so last May last year, and I ran about 7K of it on essentially a broken foot, and yeah, I had to call it a day, and that's the last sort of point when I was running like properly, if you like.
And the broken foot's all healed now.
It's got two lovely little screws in it which sort of fixed it back together, but yeah, I've had quite a sort of extensive year and a bit of injury, like probably a grand total of about 6 months on crutches and things like that. It was, yeah, it's been pretty extensive.
And obviously I read through your blog about your period that led up to these injuries.
Yeah.
And you spoke about kind of things changing in your running career around when you started to go for, you sort of picked the target of winning a Boosa medal.
Yeah.
For the British University's medal on the track.
Yeah.
Before that, had you, obviously you said you'd won you got a medal at the English school.
Yeah.
Was that a big step up, the aiming to win a Boosa medal?
Yeah, I think during my first year at uni, I think I kind of realised, okay, I was actually doing quite well and I was improving steadily. It wasn't like a sharp increase, it was a steady increase. And then I did actually get injured sort of end of cross-country season, was my first stress factor. But that was very much a case of like lack of strength and like lack of conditioning. So came back from that one very easily, basically. And then the winter afterwards got my first England vest and went to Spain, and all sort of exciting things like that were happening. And then, yeah, like going into that summer, started to think, okay, maybe I can aim for, you know, bigger things rather than just wanting to come like top five within the university. You could sort of think, well, maybe I can like get a medal on the track. And also there were things, because I wasn't, they've got like a scholarship system here. I wasn't on it in my first year, but I was thinking, okay, like within my second year, I thought I've got an England vest now. And then they were like, oh, well, you know, if you can get a Bucks medal, that'll really help your case for getting the scholarships. It was like more motivation still to try and like get to that next step.
So how did the sort of training change leading up to that? Did you start taking on more mileage?
I didn't particularly change training much, but because I had that like specific goal, is I started addressing other things because I knew the training was fine. Like I knew I had that down, and you know, I was pushing myself as hard as I needed to, all that kind of stuff, and doing all the extra like conditioning, core, like all those extra little bits, which is why I then was like, okay, like what else can I do that I'm not addressing? And I thought, well, you know, I eat well and I eat healthily, but maybe I can eat a bit healthier still. And then that was like the first step in that sort of process, really.
And did you kind of seek help in terms of your diet from someone else, from a dietitian or a nutritionist, or did you just work it out yourself?
Yeah.
And you knew where you were going and then...
Yeah, exactly. So I think I'm like fairly educated in nutrition stuff because I've done like part of the sports science in my degree, so I wasn't like completely just having a guess. It was more just a case of like I knew when I was maybe having things that were like, you know, you start like labeling foods as like bad is like key sort of first sign. So I'd be like, well, I'm not going to eat that like cake because that's a bad food to eat. So you just like changing things, you're like, okay, well, I'm gonna have an apple instead, which obviously like is fine, but over a long period of time, just small changes like that can make quite a big difference.
And so then you excluded all the bad.
Yeah, it was like, yeah. So it was sort of over Easter holidays, because that was just before Bucks 10K, and I thought, okay, like, we went away to Holland, and I, obviously when you're like away, you like go out for food and stuff, and like it's Easter, so it's chocolate and all this stuff, and like normally I would have just been like, right, well, there's a like massive Cadbury's egg, let me just finish it now. Whereas like instead I was sort of limiting myself to like one bit a day, like one small piece a day, and being like, yeah, right, that's it for today. And then when everyone else was ordering like chips at a restaurant, I was ordering a salad and like all little things like that, which I was like, no, but I have to do this because I want to win a medal at Bucks. Like, I need to behave like an athlete. This is like, you know, this ideal view in your head where you think all athletes must be absolutely perfect, which obviously is not true.
Yeah. Obviously you won that medal.
And yeah.
Just, how did that feel? Did you feel satiated by that? Did you feel
it was a bizarre race, to be honest. I'd never done a 10K, never mind one on the track. I think in my head I'd been thinking, well, like, I want to win. So I was like pleased to get third, but I was sort of like, well, I'm just getting started. I'm not, do you know what I mean? I was like, it was good, but I was like, I can do better. So, yeah, I obviously, like, now as well, I'm really proud of that. But I think at the time I was just sort of thinking, okay, it's exciting, but like, what's next? You sort of right. On to the next thing.
And do you think then, because you did have a little more of a focus on your diet, and you then won the medal, did you think at that point, did you think, I've got to do more of this, or did you think, I've just got to keep doing this? You know,
this
pattern following is the right way.
Yeah, exactly. So, and a lot as well was sort of people going, oh, like, you're looking really fit, and like, you're looking slim, and like an athlete, you're looking really fast. And all those sort of things, you're like, well, this is great. Like obviously I'm doing the right thing. So it does just grow more and more. You're hearing all the things you want to hear. And at that point, like, if I sort of look back at pictures, you can see, like, I'm definitely slimmed down a lot. Not, like, terribly so, but I've slimmed down a bit. And I was just like, well, this is, like, racing season. I'm, like, race weight, which is this flipping awful term that I hate. So I think, yeah, at the time I was thinking, well, okay, I just want to keep this going and on to the next thing. If I was thinking, I was like, oh, 3 A's, I wanted to medal in the 5K, that was the next target. So I thought, well, I better keep this going if I want to be able to do that.
And it gets addictive, like you say, like,
yeah,
with all that kind of information from other people and the feedback and stuff.
Yeah. And then I think, because it was summer, so I was away from uni and I was working full time at home, so it was really easy to develop a routine, but it was more of a restrictive routine. And I was, you know, like, okay, at X time, I'm going to eat this every day. And then it's all really, really structured, which, you know, looking back now, I can think, well, it's just completely ridiculous. But at the time, you fall into this routine and you think it's fine and it's normal. And I wasn't really training with anyone, so no one could see what I was doing almost. So it became very easy to just progressively eat less and train more, basically.
And what was next? So that came to the end of that summer into the winter.
Yeah.
And was that your, in terms of that winter following the Bucks or the Busa Championship, was that your best in terms of performance?
Yeah, so I sort of finished the summer and people are sort of saying, oh, well, Liverpool, like, you know, could make the team. And you always sort of think, like, obviously it'd be great, but
the European champ.
Yeah. You think, well, I don't really know. And the season went off to a really good start. I went to Burgos. That was my first sort of senior England vest. And then you get all these people saying, like, oh, well, if you can make the team for Burgos, you can make the team for Euros. And you sort of think, okay, whatever, don't keep telling me this. And then, well, the end of that was I did make the team. But it was, yeah, I think that was had become like my big, big goal. But it just became almost like exhausting, that goal, really, because there was one point where we had a training session here and I just felt rubbish because I had nothing in me at all. I remember sort of finishing and my coach just said to me, like, are you all right? And I just burst into tears because I was like, I'm not all right. Like, I'm just not. But it's one of those things, it became really difficult to explain to people. And you just sort of, obviously it's all the pressure and everything, because people start to tell you, like, you can make the team, and you're like, but what if I don't make the team? And is a lot of that kind of thing.
And did you feel like that pressure then affected your you're in the areas of life, so you're eating and you're even more.
Yeah, so I think coming back first, it was maybe my final year. And in the end, I ended up splitting the year and doing it over 2 years because I just couldn't cope with like having modules, having a dissertation to do, because I just didn't have the energy, essentially. I was giving myself like the bare minimum that I needed to just get by. And so it definitely had such an impact on like my studies, like my sort of general mood. It just makes you pretty horrible, really, because you're so like low and you have not really got any energy to do anything but run. I was an absolute nightmare. Like, it's one of these things I can look back now and I know I was just awful, but at the time you just sort of think, gosh, why are people on my back all the time? Like, just let me get on with it. And you sort of think, of course I know what I'm doing, like I know what I need to do, let me get on with it. So yeah.
But you made the team and you went away. In making the team, were you happy about that? Did you enjoy the experience of running?
I mean, the actual race at Liverpool itself, I don't think I've ever felt so awful in a race. And the only thing that kept me going was I could see I was like third under 23. So I knew I was in a position to like automatically make the team. I just remember thinking, oh my God, if this is any other race, I would just stop, because I just felt so awful. And I finally finished and I crossed the line. I just cried because I think I was relieved more than anything. Obviously, I was happy, but the main thing was relief, because I thought, oh, thank God I did it. Like, I did what everyone told me I should do. And then I remember afterwards speaking to my mum, and obviously I was like recovered a bit and was really happy. And this was definitely a point where I could see how concerned she'd got, because she'd spoken to someone else from the uni during the race and who'd said to her, like, you know, like, it's great, she's running really well, but she doesn't look healthy. So my mum was obviously pleased, but she was like, right, you've done it now, so, like, cut this out and just get healthier, basically. Yeah. So it was almost like a bittersweet sort of, great, I've made the team, but at what cost? That was the sort of feeling.
So did things change following qualification? Did you start to kind of adapt, or was it difficult to make that?
It was difficult, because I think the thing for me is I just wanted to make the team. Essentially, I didn't really care how I ran at Euros, so it was 2 weeks away and I knew that, and a lot of people were sort of like, right, it's 2 weeks away, like changing all different things in training. I just sort of kept the same. I was thinking, it's fine, I've made the team, I know I'm in good shape, I'm just going to relax until the actual race. So, you know, like, I went out that night and had a good time and all those sorts of things, and it did make me start to relax a bit more.
Did that go over to your eating now, or were you still quite structured in terms of what
it was? Definitely still quite structured, but I started to allow like a few more things in. So like at lunch I'd have like an extra slice of bread or anything like that, but the problem was, it was because I was so far like gone one way, I needed so much more to try and like bring myself back out of that. So it's not sort of one of these things where, like, oh, well, if you just, like, eat better for a couple of weeks, you'll be fine. Like, the amount of damage I'd done to myself at that point was so much, it was going to take a long time to recover from it. So I definitely have this sort of feeling of, like, I did the Eurocross, and I was really happy with my performance there. And then it was Christmas, so again, you'd, like, relax a bit more. And I remember sort of thinking in the year, like, oh, well, God, I got away with that. Like, gosh, look how like bad I was back then and how much better I am now. And then in the new year, had like I ran in the Edinburgh Cross as well for GB. Ran absolutely terribly. And then it transpired, I had really low iron, like one of the effects of having, you know, been so underweight. And so got through that and then was like, okay, like, blimey, that's fine. And then went away to Font Romeu, did like a really great block of training. And again, like being with sort of other athletes and seeing how much more relaxed they were than I thought like a pro athlete should be, was really good for me. And then again, came back from there and thought, oh, well, got away with that. I definitely should have had some sort of injury. And then I think, a couple of weeks later, I was like, oh, my foot hurts. And that was the start of the injury.
And so do you think the injury was... Do you blame the injury for that period when you weren't away and you weren't eating properly?
Yeah, I definitely think the injury was like a long-term result of it, in terms of the unfortunate thing is I had brought myself out of that place of not eating well, but it's one of these things that just shows the like long lasting damage of being underweight for so long, like the effect on your bones and everything like that. It's just your body just can't cope, and it does take a really long time to pull that back. So so I had like my foot injury, and then I was been running for a couple of months, and then had two more stress fractures in my hip because my bones just still were not up to that. Like, I wasn't even doing that much training, but my bones just could not take it. So it's one of these things that it puts it in perspective now. And, you know, when you think sort of, oh, yeah, I've got away with it, you can't get away with it. Like, it will come back to haunt you.
When your blog, you say you missed periods for a year.
Yeah.
In that period, which is...
I would just want to say right now to any girl, it is not right. It is not normal. Like, it's one of these things where you think, like, oh, yeah, it's fine. It must happen, like, to every female athlete. It's not normal and it's not okay. Like, it's really not good. And it's very unhealthy.
Are you now, obviously, it's been a year since that's happened.
Yeah.
Are you starting to feel yourself again? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's sort of amazing. If a lot of the time, you know, you get all these things on social media, like 1 year ago today or 2 years ago today. And I can look back at them and just think, God, I was just so miserable. And I'm so much happier now, so much more sort of positive.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to see myself. Like, I've come full circle, and like, you know, I wrote this blog over the summer, and it was quite a nice way to sort of really just push it all away and push it into the past and think I've moved on from that.
And do you think, looking back on the experience, was there any point where you feel like you either could have stepped back from that, or there was something, a sign you should have noticed, or someone should have noticed that you were going down a certain road?
Yeah.
Like, is there advice you give to people that in feeling the same way?
Yeah.
What would you say to them?
So I definitely had a couple of people say to me, oh, you've lost a lot of weight. This was over the summer. So I came back to uni and I was like, well, I've not seen you for 2-3 months. Of course I look different. Like, it's fine. You sort of, you find ways to justify everything. So it's one of these things where it is kind of like, if I saw somewhat an athlete in that situation, I probably wouldn't really know what to say myself, because you know that they would just change it and turn it on you, like, set for telling it to them. So it is one of those things. It's really difficult because there isn't like some magic thing to say and then they'll be fine. It's, you know, it's one of those things where you sort of have to start thinking, okay, like, am I actively avoiding, like, eating with people, like, in front of people? Like, the amount of times I just, if I was invited out for a meal or whatever, I just wouldn't go because I was like, well, I don't know what I'll be able to eat, and you don't want to do it. You just don't want to cope with that. If you're, you know, structuring your eating at like set times every day and getting like just overthinking everything, basically, that was my biggest, well, looking back now, I can say that was, you know, completely not normal. But at the time, I thought to myself, well, this is what I need to do to be a great athlete. I need to be thinking about it and I need to be on it all the time, which in reality is not true.
Do you think you'd have kind of benefited from the help of a nutritionist or a dietitian with that, of maybe having someone else's eyes? You think? I guess that's a hard thing to say.
Yeah, I did. So, because I went, when I had my low iron, I got like referred to all sorts of people, and I went to like an NHS dietitian, and I just went in there and I was like, well, I know all this, like, it's just a complete waste of my time. And I was just sat there like, oh God, whatever. Like, she's like, yeah, like, you need to eat more. I was like, no, I don't, I'm fine, like, shut up. Like, because you just think you know best. And then I spoke to the nutritionist at uni, and again, I was kind of like, I took on board a couple of things she said, but in the grand scheme of things, I was just like, I'm fine, I don't need to know this. It was, to be fair, by the time I spoke to the nutritionist here, I'd already pulled myself out of it a little bit, but I still wasn't eating enough because I'd gone so far into like eating the bare minimum that I still needed to eat like significantly more to be fueling myself enough, basically.
And I guess the success is addictive.
Yeah, definitely.
If you keep running well, it's hard to change.
Even the success, it's like just things in training, you can see how much faster you're getting and you just think, well, this is great, like, because, you know, as a runner, you like running fast, so if you start running faster and you just keep doing the same things because you want to run faster again, it's definitely, yeah, like, addicted, obsessive, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, you're taking a bit of a less stressful view of running in your life. Do you feel so much happier now than you did?
Yeah, definitely. I think, especially, I don't know, like, after Eurocross, I became, or even before Eurocross, running was becoming such a chore, and I always remember saying, like, to people, I hated the fact that I hated running. Like, I just got to myself to a point where, like, I did it because I wanted to do well, but I wasn't enjoying it. And that was just, it was such a shame, because in essentially the reason anyone becomes a runner is because they love running. No one does it because they think, oh, well, I'm quite good at it, so I guess I should just crack on with it. Like, everyone loves it, and I definitely, like, I wasn't, like, enjoying going training or going on runs. It was just something I had to do because I had to make the team or whatever the goal was. So now, though, I enjoy it so much more because it's sort of one of those things, I'm just so happy I can do it now. And, you know, it's nice to, like, see yourself making improvements and things like that, but I'm definitely much more relaxed about it. Like, I'll go on runs with my friends because I'm not worried if I'm doing, like, a set pace. Like, I'm just happy to get out there and get running. And I know, especially at the point I'm at the moment, just getting out and doing a run is such an improvement on sat around with my crutches next to me, not being able to do anything. So, yeah.
And do you have kind of a performance goal now? So would you like to get back to doing various races and competing?
I think this was definitely something I was, like, worried about. I was really scared that I wouldn't want to race, because I thought, like, well, I hope I do, because otherwise I was sort of thinking, God, all those sort of years of, like, hard training, and I wouldn't want to just give it up. I was definitely still had that motivation there. So, I've got some racing plans for the new year. I basically said, okay, 2016 is a non-racing year, that's fine. And then hopefully in the new year, I'm just going to do sort of races that I never would have been able to do before. Like, if I was mid-cross season, I wouldn't be able to go and do, like, random road races or whatever. Or if I was mid-track season, I wouldn't be able to do, like, all these sort of random races. So I'm very much playing it by ear, but I've got a couple of little bookmarks I might turn up to.
We'll obviously put a link to your blog on our show notes. But are you keen to carry on writing how your running's going?
Yeah. Well, initially I started writing about it, basically about my injury, because I'd read other people's blogs and I'd found them so helpful. Just because it was such a major injury, especially having the surgery and everything like that. So I did that, and it was a nice way of me being able to process it as well. And I kind of thought, well, why not share it for people going through the same thing? Because it's not a lot of people have had that. And so I remember, like, literally just Googling, like, navicular runner, and it comes up with a couple of people's blogs. And you're like, I'm not the only one. So, and then I don't really have, like, oh, I need to blog every week or whatever. Like, it's very random. I usually just do it, like, when I think of something. And then, yeah, like, over the summer, I sort of thought, okay, like, I need to explicitly write about the problems that I had with eating and this, like, obsessive culture that I had, because people don't speak about it enough and people don't know enough about it. So it was one of those things where I thought, well, if I'm now in a position where I can, like, happily talk to people about it, I should, because... So I think I'll keep writing just randomly, because, I mean, I know no one really cares about what I get up to, like, running-wise, but things like that, I'm quite happy to share and, like, give people, like, my own sort of personal advice on, because this is, like, what I said in my blog. I was like, I'm, you know, I've never spoken to, like, any psychologist or anyone about it. It's all just my own experience, but sometimes it's better to come, like, from someone who's been through the same thing, because I do remember, like, at the time, it is just so hard to explain and to explain to yourself, never mind other people. So I'll keep writing.
Yeah, good stuff. And I've got like a couple of questions to finish off with.
Yep.
That I'm asking to everybody.
Okay.
So first one is, if you could only run in one make or model of shoe, the rest of your career, which would it be?
Oh,
okay. I keep changing the phrasing of that question, but that's what I'm trying
to say. No, that's quite good. Well, to be fair, actually, so before I got injured, I always used to run in Nikes, and now I've, like, banished them from my life. I'm like, evil Nike shoes. And now I actually run in Brooks. The one I use that I really like is Brooks Ravenna, I think it's called.
Okay, yeah. A little bit of a stability shoe.
Yeah, just a little bit. I really like that.
Perfect. And if you could recommend either a read, it could be a blog or a magazine or something, or a watch, a documentary or a TV show, what would it be?
To be fair, my favourite like running book is just Paula Radcliffe's autobiography that she's done. I really like that one. That was really good. That was by my bed when I was having my surgery done. So I'd go for that one.
And I've got a feeling that will lead on to the next question, which is, what is your greatest, in your opinion, the greatest endurance running performance of all time?
Oh, yeah, that probably would make sense to follow it with, Paula Radcliffe, world record in the marathon is obviously complete goal.
yeah. Have you got any intention of doing the marathon at any stage? Would that interest you?
I mean, my coach has the intentions of me doing it, so I would assume that means I have intentions of doing it. I don't, like, obviously I'm only 22, so I've got a while to go. I think I'd like to give, like, the half a go sometime soon, maybe, especially, like, coming off of injury, I have no speed, so I'll go for longer and slower for now. But yeah, I think I would definitely do a marathon at some point. Probably not.
But the Birmingham Marathon has just started, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's true. It starts next year, but I mean, there's going to be a massive hill in it. I know what Birmingham's like. I don't want to do a marathon round here. Maybe if they get the Commonwealth Games in whenever it's meant to be, maybe then.
Good stuff. Excellent. So good luck.
Thank you.
We'll keep up to date with your return to fitness and running. Healthy return to fitness and running.
Yes. But
thanks a lot for the interview.
Thank you.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.